Fitz Admin, his monthly spot. You heard him last week with the great Campolo, as well as Terry Lesmacelli talking about the white paper of Innovation Park. We had him on for a couple of minutes. Always great to have him. You know him well, president, CEO of the great firm. It's been around almost 88 years in full. H1 Architects and Engineers. How vital this company is throughout the island and beyond. And we welcome you, sir. How are you? Hope it's all good. You have a good weekend.
Jay, had a great weekend. Good morning. Played a little soccer late last night, so I'm a little sore this morning. But outside of that, I am revved up and ready to go.
Me too. I'm sore too. I ran 4 miles Saturday, 4 Sunday. I'm ready to go, but I, you know, Monday mornings I wake up a little sore, probably because I'm getting old, and ready to bounce back hopefully on a Tuesday. But you know, it takes me about a day to recuperate now. It's crazy. You know, I like being active like you. I like being active, Rich. And the thing is, you know, when I'm active, I'm not sitting on a couch watching. Now, the Olympics, you know, they were postponed and everything else, opening ceremonies. Caught a little bit of it. It was during the show Friday because they're 13 ahead. You know that I was. So in essence, I saw glimpses of some of the stuff over the weekend, but I cannot fully get into the Tokyo Olympics yet. I don't know about you. How do you feel about the Olympics?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I watched a bit, and you know, I saw the young American win the fencing gold medal. So that was cool. I never watched fencing before. And a little table tennis and some badminton. I did get a chance then to watch the women's soccer team play, which was pretty cool. But yeah, it's not easy, and the time difference is, I don't know, 13-hour time difference. That makes it a little difficult. But I haven't been able to get into it much yet, so I'm just kind of around the periphery right now.
Me too. And they, you know, the infusion now. You like the infusion of some of these other events. You know, you have surfing now, skateboarding. You know, I mean, you have some new things coming. I mean, what's next? Underwater basket weaving? I mean, are we making everything out of an event now to watch? I mean, it is unbelievable. You can't keep track of all these new events. You like all this stuff?
You know, it's Jay, I'm going to put you and I to the old school category if you know what I'm talking about. It's I'm looking for a prototypical sport that I'm used to watching in the Olympics, and the same thing. You know, I feel as though, I guess as generations move on and some of these other sports become very interesting to people, then, you know, the host countries, I get to add a sport or two. But I'm not really into some of the new stuff. I watch archery too. I'm sure archery has been around for a while. So I got a glimpse of some archery, which was interesting. But, yeah, I'm looking for and basketball. Forget it, right? Our basketball team lost. So what else is going on?
You know, everybody expects Dream Team 92, you know, run right through it. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, MJ, you know, not the case. I mean, please. Zach LaVine, Damon Lillard. I mean, this is not nearly what 92 was. And a lot of people expecting, you know what, just roll right through. You're not going to beat guys like Rudy Gobert in France and some of those guys, Nicholas Batum. You know, these are NBAers who are playing for their countries. And they're having a tough time. Even Popovich, the great Popovich, you know, the great Pop, the coach, you know, he says it's not an automatic. You got to play the game. He's right. You know, he's right. But this is nothing nearly, you know, from basketball in the past. And I'll tell you another thing that has put a damper on it for me, and it's the COVID stuff. Not only no fans, okay, but even with the golf, DeChambeau goes home. John Rahm goes home, testing COVID positive for him. I mean, what a disgrace. Second time in a month or 2 months, whatever it is for John Rahm. Can you get the shot, John? Maybe. It'll protect you a little bit. Maybe it'll protect you. You go in the Olympics. How do you not get a shot? You're already cited back in one of the tournaments a couple of weeks ago. How do you not get an inoculation is beyond me. But, Rich, even that aspect, Bradley Beal, basketball, sent home, a couple other people, too, backup gymnast, women's side, alternate, sent home. Listen, it's real. COVID is rampant in Japan, no fans, and that puts a little something on it for me as well as far as being a negative.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, I completely agree with the no fans. And, you know, give credit to the athletes who can still motivate themselves in a way to perform without having any fans, because that adrenaline that you know you get as you know, you and I are world class athletes. We know what it means to play in front of people. But the COVID stuff is a problem. It's kind of an asterisk on the Olympics. But you know, if nothing else, if the alternative would have been, you know, less events or less sports or less athletic competition for the rest of us, at least there's something there. So I think all of us just going to have to take a step back as we, you know, enjoy some competition and just keep it in perspective. It is what it is. And, you know, let's just hope that, you know, those that are still hanging on are going to be able to, you know, give a show for us over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tune in. I'm definitely wrapped tightly around baseball, getting ready for football. I just finished hockey and basketball, so I got to get out and about a little bit. I can't watch this stuff, but you know, let's see what happens. See if we can bring home the gold in so many areas. Rich Human with us. All right, so Rich was on last week with Joe Campolo, two individuals highly prominent as far as HILI. You know, folks, we always say Silicon Valley Innovation Park. These are two economic engines, both coasts needed. Terry running the show, HILI, Alessi Maselli doing a wonderful job as always. But very important, you know, with this pandemic, Rich, and everything else, and, you know, businesses, you know, to locate or expand here on Long Island. Very important that message, you know, gets through, and you guys are right up there delivering that message. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when we were talking last week and just considering a little retrospective on how much time and effort has gone into moving the needle to where it is today, you know, the effort started, you know, nearly 5 years ago with, you know, Joe and Terry really leading an effort in order to, you know, come up with a holistic view of the overall economic benefit of the Innovation Park, you know, partnering with some Stony Brook University business students and, you know, creating an initial economic analysis report, which then, you know, led into a cooperative planning effort with Suffolk County, James Lima, identifying all the tradable sectors in the park and how money comes in from outside the region. I mean, all these things. And to me, the persistence that, when, you know, sometimes these things, you know, die on the vine, you know, sometimes they continue to move forward. But, you know, this effort has been so significant over such a long period of time. And, you know, really as a result has created a visibility of the Innovation Park that people just can't deny and they can't ignore. So, you know, elected officials at every level understand the tremendous value of the park. And, you know, what we're doing is, you know, advocating the way we always have and providing some leadership the way that we can. And in the end, if the Innovation Park increases in its own value, that's a benefit to the businesses in the park and the memberships of HILI. So there's still more to go, but, Jay, we've really brought it to a great point right now.
Yeah, and, you know, one guy in particular, and listen, we love Angie Carpenter, what she does in Iceland and everything, very important stuff. But a guy who is so under the radar all the time. Listen, even when I want to get him on the show, and listen, he loves coming on and everything else, and I feel like he should be highlighted a lot because of the work he does, not only for the town, but the Innovation Park. People don't realize, because it's right on the cusp of his town that he presides over. And I'm talking Smithtown, and I'm talking Ed Werheim, the supervisor. He is so vital and has gone under the radar with some of those things. I mean, people aren't even aware how Ed has been such an integral part as far as making this park go. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And I'm glad we kind of pointed that out a little bit last week, Rich, you know?
Yeah, he's been great, and he's a leader. You know, he understands the value that the park brings to the town of Smithtown, the hamlet of Hopog, the tax revenue that's generated. I think as Terry was speaking last week, you know, $44 million goes from the park just to the school district. tens of millions of dollars more going to, you know, the coffers of the town of Smithtown, and you have to embrace that. And the perspective, the change in perspective from the leadership of the town with the supervisor has just been great, because I think in the past, you know, the Innovation Park was, you know, keep it out of the way. If anybody complains, we'll go ahead and we'll pressure a little bit to get people to deal with things, and just looked at it as, you know, functional industry, and not recognizing the great innovation happens there, and the first in class manufacturing happens there, and there are so many tremendous things that are happening in the park, and Ed recognized that right out of the box, and understands that, you know, the ability to continue to grow and create great things requires the partnership of government and private sector industry, and to me, that's one of the greatest things that he's brought to this relationship with our organization, with the Innovation Park.
Looking in and around the island, as far as everything concerned, especially in Innovation Park, where Rich has been such a prominent board member, leading the charge along with Joe Campolo and many others. Rich, when you look at where we are now, as far as the pandemic, we're not out of the woods yet. We got a variant we're battling still, but businesses, you know, they have hung on. It's been tough times. Resiliency and everything else, you've made it this far. How would you kind of put an overall stamp on things? 17 months passed, those who survived, those who didn't. You know, businesses wanting to kind of get going a little bit, keeping growth. Some didn't hang on. How would you kind of classify everything that has occurred over the last year and a half?
Jay, it's been, tales of multiple cities, I think. And depending on your industry, there were some industries that not only didn't miss a beat, but I think they actually excelled during the pandemic because of the services they offered, all the products they offered. Then I think there were those businesses that did struggle and hung on, and the industries that those businesses are in, at a minimum, had an ability to go ahead and continue to function. And then there were those businesses in some of those industries that just got destroyed because everybody went away. Everybody stayed home. Nobody went out. Nobody frequented. And, you know, those businesses needed focus. I believe they are getting some more focus. I know that at least locally, our local governments are keenly aware of those local businesses that need support, and they're trying to put programs in place to support them. I think that those that could make it really need to continue to have local government support, where if they do want to go ahead and get their businesses back going again, that they should get whatever support they need to do that. The fact that they struggled and went out of business through no fault of their own, government has a part to play in that. But then as you move it forward, I think that not only is the economy continuing to strengthen, almost all industries are back and strengthening and have potential to continue to grow. And we're at a point right now where it's about getting the talent back. For us, we're still looking for a lot of people in our industry. There's still a lot of opportunity, and then you've got, other industries that are doing everything they possibly can to scratch and claw to get people to come back, because, the essence of our businesses are always going to be our people and the people that work for us. So I see that as one of the more significant obstacles to overcome in not only the short term, but I think, going into 2022, the ability for businesses to be able to recruit, retain talent is going to be a critical piece.
No doubt. And, listen, if you look at everything over the last few months and you hear employers stating, listen, we can't get people here. There are people still out of work and not wanting to come back to work because either they were furloughed or whatever, but you know what? Getting an extra bump as far as from the state and the government and everything else, that has played a major role, Rich, into so many things in the last couple of months. You know, that's like the number one thing right now, where people who are in business cannot find the individuals to get back in play here, keep those businesses afloat. That's been one of the number one things out there.
Yeah, it's a tremendous, tremendous issue. And I feel for those business owners. The fact that, you had combinations of things. You have, groups of people that are frankly incentivized to not come back to work, at least at this point. And, it's supposed to run out in September. We'll see if that's the case. And you also had people that had left their industries. The fact that employees were not, in most cases, and I don't blame them at all, going to sit around, the uncertainty was tremendous. And the anxiety that went into, am I going to have a job? I'm sure it was significant for people. So, the percentage of the employee pool that, made their own decision to switch careers or maybe get trained or certified in another industry and move themselves on is real. So, now you've got a void that exists in the more hard hit industries where training and developing a new wave of workers is another significant issue. So they've got that on top of the fact that they really need to overpay to attract their people to bring them back is going to make the financial health and wellness of these businesses extremely strained for, probably another, 12 months, 18 months. It's very, very difficult. And these are compounding challenges for these business owners.
That's an excellent point. And that's something that was never in the equation, right? When you think about it, because now you're trying to lure people back into play here. How do you do that? You offer more money. Was that in the budgets? No. So that's where Rich says the strain. That's an excellent piece of information, without question. But in all, just getting back to Innovation Park, I mean, you're confident going forward, the rebound and everything else, as we get out of this mess, and who knows how long we're going to be in it, because, you still got the variants. You're still under-vaccinated in a lot of areas, which is a major contributor now to this mess we're in, not only locally here, but around the country. But you're confident that you see long-term Innovation Park and how vital they are. You're confident that it's going to get back up to speed and hopefully be maybe where it was way back, right?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And the fact that there is so much focus there, the fact that leadership at all levels is keenly aware of the value in a recovery and a rebound to the success of the businesses in the park is going to be, I think, just a great step forward for us in the region. You add into it the fact that developers have keen interest as, we spent a little bit of time talking about the zoning overlay that the town has put in place to allow mixed use in the park. That's going to transform the park. And, when you consider the fact that we have all kind of smartened up and said, there's value in revitalizing industrial areas, there's value in revitalizing around train stations, things that we for decades had run away from, they're now being embraced by us. And, that's going to cause us to really transform Long Island and set us up for the future. And I think the Innovation Park is going to have an important piece to play in that.
Rich Human, CEO, President, H2M Engineers, Architects and Engineers, largest full service of its kind company. I mean, they've been around, folks. They started way back in 33, believe it or not, 1933. Not Rich, still a young guy. But in essence, it's a company that has thrived, that is vital, building and everything else. Your company even comes more into play right now as we look to rebuild. I'll tell you one area, Belmont Park, I've seen pictures. It is looking phenomenal. The home of the Islanders, the arena, the UBS, November 20th, their first game in and around that area. I mean, that is a gorgeous-looking area. That is going to be a centerpiece for a long time, Rich.
No doubt. It is. It's beautiful. They did a fantastic job with it. and there's still more to come in the vicinity around the USB Arena. So, you know, those are the kind of things that I think historically have plagued us, always challenging to, you know, move forward those kind of significant, real significant projects. So if you think about that and what we're doing in some of these other, you know, kind of major areas of Long Island, it sends, I think, a great message to the population in general. It sends a great message to the development community, sends a great message to our government community. I haven't felt such a strong sense of partnership between government and private sector as I do now and I have over the last few years. And, you know, that's critical. That's critical to move ourselves forward. We, you know, for those that think we can just continue to be what we were and, you know, we're comfortable that way, it's understandable, but the risk of being comfortable is, you know, the world passes you by. And I think, you know, as a region, you know, we did not do a good enough job over the last decade of embracing the need to have to change and grow and evolve. And USB Arena, to me, is a prime example of the commitment that we have to make as a region to move ourselves forward. So I'm thrilled for it. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great for the Islanders. And, you know, I think I've got my season tickets already, so I'll be there pretty often.
Listen, I know who to call now. But in essence, yeah, I mean, that's just one piece. And as you move east, you know, reading about this East Side Access deal with the railroad and the MTA, you know, that's, you're looking at that next year, the 8-9 mile stretch of track there, Floral Park, Hicksville. You look at the Nassau hub in and around the new building there in Uniondale. Give me an update there. How have things progressed, plans in place, breaking ground and everything else? But are you satisfied as far as what will be there over in Uniondale?
Yeah, I think they're really planning some great stuff over there, and it's going to take time. You know, it's a multi-years development, but taking the right steps. And I think that the plan that's going into that is going to be another live, work, play community, which I think is critical. And looking at bringing in businesses and high level biotechnology and things like that, where we have to continue. We've got, world-class facilities here on Long Island, and our businesses need to remain on par with our research facilities and our academic institutions. And I think the NASA Hub is going to play a really big part in that. And everything I hear and read and conversations I've had with key people that are involved, I'm very optimistic with what's happening there. Third track, it's funny, bring up third track. I was having a conversation about third track with somebody last week, and thinking just about my company and the people that I'm looking to attract, young professionals who are, interested in living in Brooklyn, in Long Island City, in Queens, but would like to work in Melville. The historic thinking was never, live in the city and work out on Long Island. It was always live on Long Island and commute into the city. So what we're doing now with the third track and, creating the ability for us to expand our reach in terms of accessing talent and allowing, the young professionals that work here to be able to kind of live wherever they want, I think is great. New York City is going to have to embrace that also. So, it in the past, if it was about, as New York City went, Long Island went, I think there's going to be a much greater partnership now moving forward where, as Long Island is going, there's going to be value brought to New York City as well. So for the future, I think that really bodes well for our region, and I'm excited about third track getting done. I think it's going to open up a lot for us.
All right. Now, with that being said, ridership is down, and I'm talking in a major way. You know, when you're 85% down, that is a signal to me that people are foregoing the city right now and, have gotten the green light as far as working out of their homes. You know, I mean, that's just a way of life right now. Will it change? No one knows. But what do you think as far as that is concerned? Now, listen, the access, third rail, all good stuff. But the fact remains that many are staying home because they can. That is a huge savings to companies, a huge saving to individuals. MTA could be in a little trouble here, Long Island Railroad. How does that, in your mindset, kind of play into this very complicated equation?
Yeah, it's a great point, Jay. I think that there, you know, we haven't reached our own equilibrium yet in terms of what that is going to look like in the long term. Clearly, there are many businesses that have, at a minimum, recognized the value and at a maximum, seen actually improved performance with their employees working from home. So moving forward, all businesses are going to have to embrace, you know, some element of either, you know, full workforce working remotely, partial workforce, some kind of hybrid approach and work flexibility. I mean, that's what we've done. We've got a flexible work arrangement here and what I would consider more of a hybrid approach. But at the same time, as we continue to grow, there's going to be, I think, opportunities for us to go ahead, optimize our workspaces, maybe change them up a little bit, make them look a little bit different. If, you know, the prototypical, you know, cubicle approach to workspaces is probably going to change. You're probably going to have more collaborative spaces and team meeting spaces. So I still think that there's clearly going to be the need to have people coming into the office in some arrangement. And I think time is going to tell a little bit on that. You know, you spoke a bit about, you know, the concern with the variants and that still sits in people's minds, and not everybody's comfortable yet, you know, going back into their office environment. And at some point, they will. We will be past this. At that time, I think businesses are going to have to go ahead and, if I'm sure they're doing it already, I know we've done it, and evaluate what's the optimal approach to, you know, utilizing the space that you're already committed to, and what is your space going to look like moving forward. I agree with the fact that ridership on the railroad is going to be impacted even long term from what it was pre-pandemic. You know, hopefully not too bad with the investment we're making. As long as we get to utilize it in a way that's good for all of us, I think that's a really important element of it. And, you know, MTA might have to change its strategy a little bit in order to entice people to utilize the railroad. And, you know, that's something that I'm sure they're thinking about, and time will tell on that.
Interesting. You know, I'll tell you, there's a lot that comes into play. Rich Heumann, my guest. Rich, one more. We'll take a quick break. And that is, you know, you brought up the commuting and everything else. Now, offices right now, I'm noticing, and we've seen it on some of the college campuses, requiring a vaccine or else. If you're not vaccinated, go home. If you're vaccinated, you can come into the office. We have seen now this variant out there. We've seen the positivity level, especially here on the island, rise. Are you looking at down the road as a little bit more stringent policy regarding businesses where they are going to make sure that employees have gotten the shot? If you don't have the shot, then you can't come in. I mean, are we going to see an overall mandate? We've seen it in certain instances here. And a lot of people, now listen, I'm not for the mandate overall, okay? I still think it's a choice, and hopefully people see the, you know, the light of day here as far as what the shot can do for you. But in essence, what about the world of business here? Is that what we're coming to? Because we've seen glimpses of it already. What do you think?
Yeah, I think a little more hopeful that that wasn't going to be the case. You know, for us, I don't see that happening. We have a pretty clear policy right now. We've had in place for a while where it is about the individual. And, you know, CDC guidance still, you know, if you're vaccinated, don't wear a mask. If you're in public spaces, if you're unvaccinated, wear a mask in public spaces. We have that within our spaces where when you're not sitting in at your desk. You need to wear a mask if you're going into some of the public areas if you're unvaccinated. And if you are vaccinated, you don't. And I think stay consistent with that, assuming that, you know, nothing from the government comes down and provides anything that's more stringent than that. But I can see that happening. I think a lot of the talk now about mask mandates, I'm just not in favor of. I'm in favor of individual decisions and choice. And, you know, I still believe that we can provide a safe work environment for our employees regardless. We did it before there was a vaccine. We did it. And there's no reason why we can't continue to do it. But, you know, there's going to be, you know, a reaction or potential overreaction. But to me, you know, we're so far advanced in our understanding than we were, 12, 18 months ago that, you know, I think it's taking a very negative step backwards to go back to a mask mandate. And I'm hoping that we don't do that.
And listen, it's getting too political, you know, and that's the thing. You know what? Listen, the DOJ suspending investigations as far as what happened here in the state in the nursing home. You know, everything now has gotten so political. It has intervened, unfortunately, into the situations of trying to operate on a daily basis. But you can't help but bring politics into this stuff, which is becoming an issue. It really is. So it'll be very interesting in the next couple of months. Rich Human, my guest, it is a monthly spot, of course, the great president and CEO, one of the great companies here on the island for a long time, H2M Architects and Engineers. You know, we hit a little bit of Nassau, Rich. As far as Suffolk County, you know, you look at that Ron Conkuma hub, how vital that will be. What can you tell us? We haven't heard a lot on it, but everything going as planned there with the hub?
Yeah, it's going great out there, and it keeps moving on to next phases. It's beautiful. The fact that we are creating another live, work, play environment, really at a point where, you know, in the past, I think the Ron Conkuma train station was, when you were in Penn, it was, you know, the end of a certain line. But now I know from the developer's perspective, it's, you know, going to be viewed as more of a gateway to the east end of the island. And, you know, what better way to go ahead and, you know, create the sense of a gateway than to have a, you know, a new thriving community out, around the Ronkonkoma train station. So I think that what's happening right now currently is going really, really well. How the planning for the development of the south side of the tracks integrates into that will be interesting. I haven't heard much of that lately, but it's going to be really important that there's a coordinated effort so that, you know, you don't have a fragmented approach to, you know, what's happening at the hub versus what the thinking is in, redeveloping the south side and, you know, connecting the train station to the airport. I know there's all sorts of, you know, conversation and planning going into that, which to me, again, is a game-changing transformation from what we have today. You know, if you could go to the airport, get to the train station, and then go, you know, points east and west from there, you know, that's going to set us up for the next 50 years in how we handle, transportation on the island. So all sorts of great stuff, Jay. And something else is going to take a lot of time. But as long as the ball keeps moving down the field the way we need it to, and I believe it is right now, that's going to be important for us.
And you look at infrastructure, we know they're trying to get a bill going on Capitol Hill and everything else. We know the island has certainly benefited as far as raking in millions, rescue plan and everything else, hopefully putting it to good use. You know, you look at Nassau as far as infrastructure on those roads. They had about, I think it was $75 million or so. Some of the worst roads around, we know Long Island has. And, you know, that is always a question when it comes to the residents. you know, the infrastructure, the roads especially, leading in and around the expressway. This is big time. So a lot of it is state responsibility. I get it. But that certainly has to be at the top of the charts, right, as far as making sure that these roads, you know, we get more complaints on the roads, Rich, than anything else. People want to see these roads fixed. I mean, they've had it with these potholes, especially after storms and everything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is it's just not good enough. You know, we don't do a good enough job of reinvesting in our infrastructure in a way that doesn't wait until things fail before we fix them. And, you know, pick the element of infrastructure. That's, you know, for whatever crazy reason, the crazy reason is things cost money. But we don't maintain our infrastructure well enough. We definitely don't maintain our roads well enough. The expressway is a perfect example of that. It is, and, you know, the fixes that are being done right now are clearly temporary. These are not permanent solutions. So all it means is that unless there's a true commitment to maintaining the roads in a way that aren't going to require us to go ahead and, you know, make repairs year after year after year. I mean, frankly, after this winter, it was downright dangerous driving the expressway, and I would say, you know, further out in Suffolk than in Nassau. But, you know, that's something that I, you know, coming from where I come from, I just have a hard time understanding how it's not so clear that, you know, as goes your infrastructure, as goes your ability to grow, your ability to develop, your ability to, you know, generate revenue for your economy. But it's kind of that, you know, in the back room conversation that we just don't commit ourselves to infrastructure the way that we frankly have to.
So are you happy that the decision for LIPA, we're going to get him on, CEO Tom Falcone, in the next couple of days, wants to come on. Are you happy with that decision as far as partnering with PSEG Long Island and everything else? Now, listen, we saw a trop storm here, Elsa, a couple of weeks ago. It was dicey. Power was lost. They got it back on quick. Let's give them credit. But I'll tell you, long-term, big-time storm, are you confident that this partnership was renewed? A month or so ago, are you confident that they can thrive as far as PSEG is concerned?
Yeah, I think it was the right thing to do. And, you know, whenever you go through and you address crisis, you know, and we had a really, really bad experience with Isaiah. And, you know, at the end of the day, it came down to a lack of, you know, having a communication infrastructure in place. And so you identify it, you deal with it, you kind of reframe your terms and you say, these are the things that we fully expect. This is how we're going to measure your performance. Because, you know, if you take a look at the other improvement work that has been done for our electric grid and our distribution system, it's been tremendous. I mean, you know, the post-Sandy investment, I'm going to say it's almost $1 billion has been invested in, you know, new lines, new poles, elevating substations to prevent them against flooding. I'm really happy with a lot of the commitment that was made specifically with our electric distribution system. Now, you know, moving forward, they can't have a repeat of what they had. You know, you can't have people in general, I think, are understanding, but they can't be in the dark. They need to have information. And one way or another, yeah, I mean, that was clearly a major black eye, I think, for both. I think for LIPA and for PSEG, that was a black eye. And I'm sure that, you know, LIPA and PSEG have made it clear that that's not going to happen again, and that would be a failure if something like that happened again. So, and you can't, you know, these things are like, you know, stealing battleships. You can't just make left-hand turns and right-hand turns. There's not an ability just to say, okay, we're going to cut a relationship with you, and have somebody else step in. It's very difficult to do that. The smartest thing to do is to make sure that as Leiper, your expectations are clear, the terms of your agreement are clear, and that PSEG is going to commit to the things that you want them to commit to. And if they will, and I'm sure there are consequences if they don't, to me, that's the right way to move forward.
Kevin Law out, going into other endeavors in his life. Are you confident in new leadership here, Long Island Association? And listen, they've been vital. They have a pulse on things like no one else. Are you confident the new leadership LIA can thrive here?
Yeah, you know, I've known Matt Cohen for a number of years, and we have a good relationship. You know, he's motivated clearly. He understands the value that the LIA brings to Long Island in general. He has a vision. He's communicated his vision, which I think from the board's perspective has been well received. And, you know, in general, a lot of the great work that Kevin has done to elevate the organization, to create the voice that the organization has and the influence that we have, to build on that. And, you know, utilize that as a platform to continue to have the LIA focus on other things that are beneficial to our region and to the businesses on Long Island. So I'm excited for the future of LIA. I'm excited for Matt. He's thrilled to be able to have this opportunity. And, you know, when you're somebody who has skill and is motivated and is really happy with the opportunity ahead of you, I think that's a great recipe for someone to be successful. So I think Matt will be successful.
Because it's part of the contract, and if I don't, I get in trouble through Rich, and that is his beloved Mets. I always got to talk about the Mets. And listen, why not? They're in first place, and you got to be thrilled, right? Because, you know, my team, I got a fork in them, okay? Especially after yesterday I'm done. So I'm so off the team, except for Judge. I don't care who goes. But your team has shown such resiliency. I mean, you got to be proud of this team. I mean, this team has something going on here. You know, I mean, it really does.
Yeah, I mean,
good job.
So they're plugging in, and I think that so let me talk about your team for a minute. The Yankees use some energy plugged in, a different approach to how you hit the ball, and I think that's been a little bit of the benefit that the Mets have had is that even though Alonso's waking up and smashing the ball. They're scoring runs the right way. They're pitching well. DeGrom is still. I'm not wrapping my head around him yet, and that's going to be key. You know, I can't have him pitching every couple of games, and then all of a sudden, you know, my elbow's tight, my shoulder's tight. That's a problem. But I think even if the Yankees start playing some better baseball, I mean. The teams in their division, you know, the Red Sox and the Rays, and they're good. Toronto's good. So it might be a little bit out of the hands of the Yankees whether or not they're going to be able to come back.
For me, it's next season. This is not this season at all. Can't get any traction. All right, listen, love having you on as always, my friend. Stay well, and we'll be in touch. How's that?
Jay, great. Have a great week. We're going into August, so enjoy the rest of the summer. I'll talk to you next month.
And we'll talk some football, too. Great stuff. The great Rich Heumann, president, CEO. What a job he does as far as H2M architects and engineers. Just has a pulse, folks, on the island like no one else.